2.5 years ago, I was sitting at my desk in Philadelphia, where I work as a pediatric palliative care nurse practitioner, when the call came in. The call was from an oncology nurse practitioner. She wanted to know if our team would go and meet an 18-year-old young man named Colin. Colin's cancer had relapsed. She told me on that phone call that Colin was flat and stoic. He was depressed and anxious. He was in a lot of pain, and they didn't know how to help him anymore. I reluctantly agreed to go and meet Colin, and I say reluctantly because an 18-year-old who's living with a life-threatening illness and is anxious and depressed is really a difficult thing. But I went to meet Colin that next week at his clinic appointment. I walked into the room, and Colin was exactly as described. He was laying flat on the exam table, on his back, with his knees bent, staring up at the ceiling. He was wearing a ski cap on his head, and he didn't say very much. His mother chattered away, and from Colin I got one-word answers. I prescribed some pain medication for him. He reluctantly agreed to that. And I left that first visit with Colin feeling pretty useless. I had no idea how I would be able to help Colin. If his oncology team, who had known him for years, couldn't bond with him, how was I possibly going to be able to break through these walls and help him? But there was something about Colin that drew me in, and so I kept going back. I took care of Colin week after week, and pretty soon we got his physical pain under control. But I realized quickly that Colin was suffering from total pain. Total pain is pain that is physical, psychological, emotional, and spiritual. And once total pain is recognized, total pain is very difficult to treat. It's difficult because sitting with the psychological and emotional parts of knowing that you're going to die is really hard. But I kept going back and I kept visiting with Colin, and sometimes Colin wouldn't say a word during our visits, but he rarely asked me to go away. Sometimes we would chat about silly nonsense. Sometimes Colin would show me a magic trick. And I got to know Colin over time. He would tell me that he felt like no one was listening to him. And so I began to become his voice as I worked with the other teams caring for him. One night, I was on call, one of the many perks of my job, and the phone rang. It was around 10 p.m. I picked up the phone, and Colin's voice was the voice on the other end of it. "Hi," he said. "I'm glad you answered. My mother reminded me that you were on call tonight, and she told me I should call you. I'm anxious, and I can't sleep." My mind was racing. What was I going to say to Colin? How could I possibly help him? What could I tell him that would make him feel better? And I had to stop and tell myself to just be quiet and listen. And that's exactly what I did. Colin started to talk. He told me what it felt like to know that he was dying of cancer. He told me that he couldn't speak when he came for most of our visits because he physically felt like he couldn't. As their car pulled up to the hospital, he would see the buildings and get a physical pit in his stomach. Then he said, "I feel like I'm on an island, all by myself. A huge tidal wave is coming at me, and there's nothing I can do to stop it. I feel like no one's telling me the truth. No one's giving me any answers." Then he said, "Thank you. I feel better now." And he hung up the phone. I will never forget that conversation with Colin. It was during that conversation that I knew that I would have to be Colin's advocate. Shortly after that conversation, we had a family meeting. Colin wasn't at that family meeting, but his mother was. I was there, and so were members of the oncology team. I still remember exactly where everyone sat in that room. It was during that meeting that I really had to become bold. I had to challenge the oncology team and to somehow figure out a way to shift gears from trying to figure out what would make Colin better to figuring out what would make Colin happy, to give him a good quality of life. Colin really wanted a pet gecko, but he wasn't allowed to have one because the risk of infection was too great. It was in that meeting that I boldly said to the oncology team, "It's time to get the gecko. Let him get the gecko." Everybody finally agreed, and when we told Colin after the meeting that he was allowed to get the pet gecko, it was one of the first times that I saw his face light up with a smile. Following that meeting, Colin began to get sicker. He ended up spending more time in the hospital. Eventually, he was in the ICU. And then he ended up on a ventilator and intubated. I continued to visit with Colin and his family and to take care of him and manage his pain and other symptoms. And as time wore on, I saw that the direction we were heading in. Things were getting worse and getting worse quickly. So one Friday afternoon, I was in the room, and I knew that it was time to be very frank and honest with Colin's mother. Colin was asleep for most of the visits at this point, and so I was talking to his mom with his permission. And it was really hard to find the words to say to her. How could I ask her what Colin would want? If the tube came out for some reason over the weekend, would he want it replaced? How could I tell her that the alternative was to let Colin die? I wasn't sure what to say, but I finally found the words and talked with her. She looked at me and said, "I guess this is where we are now, Vanessa, isn't it? Thank you for being honest with me. We need some time to think." Colin didn't die that weekend, but he didn't get any better. I continued to visit with Colin on a daily basis at this point. And one Thursday afternoon, I stopped by his room just to check in. I told them to call me if they needed anything. And I went to my office to gather my things and go home. I was getting ready to leave, and my phone vibrated. I looked at the phone, and there was a message from his mom, and it said, "Come back right now." I went back down to Colin's room. I went over to his bedside. Colin couldn't speak at this point because he had a tube in, so he would write out his messages. He wrote on the screen, "I am ready to stop." I looked at Colin, and I asked him with every fiber of my being if he knew what that meant. And he wrote out with a trembling hand the word death. I asked Colin repeatedly if he was ready and if he was sure this is what he really wanted, and did he have any questions. He wrote, "Will it hurt?" I promised Colin that we would do our best to make him comfortable. His mother and I then asked him what felt like 1,000 times if he was sure that he was ready and this was what he really wanted. He eventually wrote, "Get the meds." I had no idea that that night would be the most memorable night of my career. I was nervous, but the music was starting and I was the conductor. I rallied all of Colin's teams that were caring for him and told them of his wishes. Everyone was sad, but everyone came together. I went into Colin's room, and I stayed in that room for hours. I didn't leave the room. I didn't go to the bathroom. I didn't eat. I don't think I even sat down. But I did my best to be present. It was really difficult to get Colin comfortable. He was wearing his favorite ski cap, the one that he had worn at all of his visits. And at one point, we finally got a little comedy relief when we played some of Colin's favorite music. And there were some really, really inappropriate lyrics, which gave us all a much-needed laugh. And eventually, Colin became comfortable. His breathing slowed. We started to turn down the vent. His mother told him that they would be okay without him. Then we both told him it was okay to let go. I leaned over and whispered in Colin's ear. I thanked him for all that he had taught me. I thanked him for allowing me to be bold as his advocate. Then I kissed Colin gently on the forehead and promised him that he would never be forgotten. Colin died at around 2 a.m. that morning. And I still didn't leave the room. I stayed there with his mother until she was ready for me to go. 2 years later, I still keep in touch with Colin's mom. Just recently, she told me that their family keeps as their mantra, get the get-go. Perhaps I should make that my mantra too, get the dang get-go. Because in caring for Colin and in advocating for him, I became bold. I became bold as his voice and strong as his advocate and fearless as I carried out his wishes. Thank you.